Pot Tackler, episode 403, Year's End, for December 19th, 2013. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And we are here for our final podcast of the year, guys. It has been a very eventful 2013 for Halo. Lots of cool stuff that has gone on. Lots of updates to matchmaking, to Halo 4, kind of across the board. Huge changes in terms of title updates, the Halo Global Championship. Lots of different things happened this year for Halo, so it's been a wild ride, and we're coming to the end of this year. What do you think, Brent? It's been hell of fun for me.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride for the Halo universe, Halo community. And you wouldn't think it would be, you know, considering that kind of, you know, just a year and a half out from Halo 4, and you would think it would have just died down, but it didn't, you know? It got crazier and crazier and crazier, and here we are at the end of 2013, still talking about Halo and Halo 4 and what's going on with people in the community.
Well, I think people may think we're a little crazy if we talk about Halo for as long as we have, especially being a podcast of 8+ years, which we hit this year, and 400 episodes.
I mean, there's like Star Wars podcasts out there, right? And there's not like Star Wars movies coming out all the time.
But they do have an extensive library of novels to go off of as well.
An extended universe. But I mean, Halo's got that too. We have books and comics.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
Yeah.
When you think about it. But it's going to be an interesting ride from here on out too, because we have supposedly Halo 5 launch for next year on the Xbox One, which is going to be pretty interesting. We have matchmaking updates coming down the pipeline for the beginning of next year as well. Of course, there's going to be E3, which we'll probably see some good stuff for Halo 5, PAXs, San Diego Comic-Cons, RTX. It's going to be an eventful year next year for us as well. So it's big changes for the site, too, that I definitely want to get out there and implemented for everyone, which is, I mean, lots of ambition coming into this next year and lots of anticipation for the next Halo game. Oh yes. Thank you, Pins. I saw Halo TV. We got that coming down the pipeline too, which is I'm kind of a little hesitant, but I'm a lot more open to the idea of Halo TV.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
Because of how well, in my opinion, Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn was actually a very well produced series. I really enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, that was probably my favorite piece of Halo multimedia, like outside of the games. I mean, I haven't read most of the books, so I really don't have much reference there. But Forward Unto Dawn was really, really good, and it really got me excited for Halo 4. So I'm hoping that Bonnie Ross will do something amazing with the Halo TV series. I just don't know what to expect.
I know, that's what the thing that really has me excited, though, because Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn was kind of a little bit out of left field in terms of what exactly we were expecting for it, but it came out to be a very good series. I think it won a couple awards, too.
Oh, yeah, it did, for, like, best web series or something crazy. But, it's going to be great. Are there any details on exactly how that's going to get distributed? Is it just going to, like, show up on Xbox Ones across the nation, like, every week? They'll just show up on, like, the dashboard or something. I mean, I don't have an Xbox One, so I don't know what the UI looks like or navigation amongst that.
It's supposed to be part of, if I remember right, like, Xbox TV programming. So however they decide to kind of implement that for the Xbox One, I would imagine it's something like that. So it'd probably be one show among a few other shows or many shows on that would be exclusive to the Xbox One. That's kind of how I understood it during the Xbox reveal. But was that back in April or May? It was sometime right before E3.
Yeah, it was somewhere in that time frame.
Yeah.
But
I'm really excited to see what comes of it.
I kind of wish they would have got it on real TV, like either network or cable television. Just if only to get more people maybe interested in Halo. Because if you already have an Xbox, chances are you are a Halo fan. I mean,
right.
I mean, this TV series is made for the Halo fans, which is great. But, I mean, you have things like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I haven't watched it. But, I mean, that's a Marvel series on a network, you know, network television, you know, ABC. So,
but if you think about it, that's kind of by extension of the movies. And it's a lot easier for a movie adaptation into a TV series than necessarily a video game adaptation into a TV series.
Yeah, but they've shown that they can do it with Forward Unto Dawn and the live action commercials.
Well, so they've shown that they can produce something like that, but getting it into TV networks, that's something a little bit different.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see kind of where that falls. And they've said it's exclusive Xbox One programming. And that might be another thing that they're just kind of pushing Xboxes if you want to see it. And like you said before, if you like Halo, you're probably going to have an Xbox One to get the next Halo game, and you're going to be able to just watch it on the Xbox One platform. So,
I also think it'd be funny if you put it on PS4, just to, like, poke Sony in the eye. You know?
I mean, you just put it on Netflix or something and then go from there, because Halo Legends is on Netflix.
Yeah. I think you could put Spartan Assault on PS4. If they had let you, I don't think Sony would, you know, actually let them get that onto their marketplace.
Yeah, probably not.
They'd be like, nah.
I don't think they're going to let MGS... Well, I don't know if MGS even has the interest to publish to the PlayStation consoles.
That wouldn't make sense. The exclusives are important to the consoles because they are exclusive, you know, because you can't get them anywhere else.
Right.
But, I mean, look at Metal Gear Solid. That was a very Sony franchise, and now it's expanded to Xbox.
That is true. We will, I guess we'll have to see kind of what comes of it.
Yeah, but I think Halo's always going to be an Xbox thing. I mean, Xbox is kind of defined by Halo in a way, especially the original Xbox. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Xbox 360 is where they branched out and then showed that they could actually have other franchises on there other than Halo, but Halo made the Xbox. The Xbox would not be around today, I don't believe, if Halo wasn't there.
Yeah, it was definitely the launch title of the Xbox console.
Yep, the killer app.
Yeah. So, I'm excited. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, yeah. I think all Halo fans are excited for a Halo TV series. You know, I mean, anytime you can get more immersed into the universe, that's a good thing.
Right. So we're going to go ahead and jump pretty much straight into the bulletin for this week, because we have an actual Q&A from Frankie, of all things, and there's a few pretty good responses in there. Some kind of hinting at what might be coming down the pipeline in the future, and just kind of some revelations of what happened during the development of Halo 4 in his opinion. So I've kind of picked a few of the questions that I want to go through, and Brent, if there are any that you want to go through as well that I don't cover, definitely feel free to bring those up. But we're going to kind of dive through those a little bit, discuss them, and then after that we're going to kind of take a look back at what Halo has done in 2013, and then we'll wrap up the show for our last episode of the year, which has been an awesome, awesome ride. So, first thing is first. First question that I have that I wanted to kind of look at is from XLG Atomics. He asks, if you could change one thing about Master Chief, what would it be? And Frankie's response is, I would change his rank, or better still, people's understanding of his rank. The Master Chief Petty Officer is a naval rank that is the highest attainable for enlisted men. It demands respect, but demonstrates worth, ability, and hard work. All things that you can assume are true of someone in that role. And the role demands such respect that you'll even see senior commissioned officers defer to, or at least acknowledge, that rank in decision-making and general behavior. So, if you guys didn't know, Master Chief, the name is actually synonymous to his rank, which is Master Chief Petty Officer, and like Frankie says, it's a naval rank. And one of the things that have cropped up every now and then is, why doesn't he get promoted or something like that? And I think for canonical reasons, that would kind of lose the association with the name that's been established. But if you look at it, it's the highest attainable rank for enlisted men. And if you think about it, I think most Spartans are just going to be enlisted out there doing work. I think it's just a few exceptions like Commander Palmer where you'll see that go to the officer ranks over the enlisted ranks.
Yeah.
But I wonder how many people actually are aware that Master Chief is actually his rank and not necessarily just a name that is associated with that character.
Probably quite a few just don't really understand it. Prior to playing Halo, I didn't know that Master Chief Petty Officer was a rank until I, looked it up. But he's the Master Chief. It's just funny that his rank has essentially become his name. I mean, he's not John to most people. I mean, even if you know his name is John, he's still MC or the Chief or Master Chief or, any kind of variation on that.
Well, and if you listen to all the dialogue in the game, whenever a Marine sees him or a civilian sees him, hey, look, it's the Chief. Hey, Master Chief.
Yeah. It'd be like calling Commander Palmer Commander, though, just Commander. Never actually calling her Palmer or, whatever else people call her, but.
Right.
It's odd, but it's iconic. Master Chief is an iconic character in all of video game The pantheon of great video game characters. Master Chief is one of the most popular and famous. You see him alongside characters like Mario and, Solid Snake, things like that. So yeah. You can't really promote him at this point. I mean, he's at the highest possible enlisted rank he could get, but even if he were to get promoted into a commissioned officer rank, I don't think they would do it just because his name, he is the Master Chief. They don't want to change right. that. People associate Master Chief with Halo, and they associate Halo with Xbox, so it's kind of a sacred cow. You can't touch it.
Well, and the thing with being an enlisted an enlisted soldier is that you're out there on the battlefield, which is where most Spartans are. And once you hit officer rank, that's when you get your desk job. And I can see Palmer kind of doing a desk job, but I definitely couldn't see John doing a desk job.
That would actually be hilarious. Like, just a Halo game where you're just doing, paperwork and stuff, just, desk jobs, barking orders. That'd be all right. I'd play that. Or just a game
What would you title that kind of a game?
Halo I don't even
Office
know.
Evolved?
Yeah.
But I thought that was an interesting question and one that, I think doesn't come up that often, but it's one that I think people, once they sit down and kind of think about Master Chief and what that means, is something that is kind of a eye-opening experience if you haven't really thought about it and you think about it for the first time. So,
well, I mean, it's not that crazy if you think about it, though, because he is the best of the best.
Right.
Of all the soldiers, he is the best. Like, in the entire military, John is arguably just the greatest soldier humanity has ever encountered. So, of course, he would have the highest enlisted rank he could possibly get.
Right. So, next one that I have highlighted is from Ciara, I think. I'm not sure how exactly you say that. But he asks, why did the UNSC stick to projectiles as their main form of weaponry, or even now when Oni has developed lasers? Frankie's response is, the truth is that creating a distinctive human flair, sound, silhouette, and look for the universe is important to the nature and identity of the canon, and the canonical reason would be that projectiles are something you can build easily and cheaply in almost any human-friendly environment. And we don't shy away from the fact that we have a massive military-industrial complex at play. Halo actually takes place at a cusp of more energy-efficient shift in our tech and you have these contrasts. Faster than light travel and standard classless ammo. Frankly speaking, it is like that because it feels good.
Yeah.
So mostly because, that boils down to basically it's because of the identity that in our current state we have projectile weapons and it's easy to identify more with those weapons than the energy weapons that has been kind of obtained by the Covenant and developed by Oni researchers and all that stuff. And Frankie basically put in there that we're on the cusp of actually kind of delving into that energy efficient technology, or it's not quite there yet. So it would be interesting to see coming down the line for Halo how much of a shift we would see from projectile weapons to energy weapons, if we even see that kind of progression at all.
I always thought it was interesting that, I mean, generally aliens in sci-fi franchises have some form of like laser weaponry. I mean, generally just everybody has laser weaponry in sci-fi, but in Halo, the Covenant had plasma weaponry, which is not lasers. So that's, I mean, it was just completely different, had a different sound. The idea was cooler. I mean, the idea of just this, you know, extremely hot plasma that can burn through, you know, miles of metal.
Well, Stargate has plasma.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's obviously, you know, exceptions to the rule. But just generally, like, lasers are associated with sci-fi. And so I always kind of appreciated that Halo wasn't just pew, 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 you know, laser fest.
Right. Well, we have a Spartan laser.
Yeah. That's the thing, though. The Spartan laser is cool because it is, like, the one laser cannon thing amongst just general, like, ballistic weaponry and plasma. And then the, you know, we have the Forerunners now, and they have, I mean, that's not even, I guess you could possibly say it's laser technology, but it's hard light technology, you know, it's different.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea.
If you think about it, too, projectile has a lot more momentum behind it than laser does. I mean, laser, once it hits the surface, it's kind of done. But for projectiles, once you hit something, it digs in and kind of just obliterates whatever's in its path.
Well, the kinetic force causes damage, too.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you get shot, if you get shot and it goes clean through you, you have a better chance than if it ricochets through your body and just frags your bones and stuff. The cutting isn't necessarily what kills you. It's the kinetic force blowing through your bones.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I also like the sound of human weaponry, like they were talking about. And I like that very ballistic explosion sound you get.
Well, I think because what he said, we're very familiar with it, and it helps identify with the canon of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's human. It's a very human thing. But, I mean, you would also have to think that the Covenant would also have ballistic weaponry. I mean, if they're so advanced, they would have also understood the idea of throwing a large piece of metal at you. That's the entire point of the Mac Cannon. The Mac Cannon it's a giant magnetic gun that works in essentially the same way as a ballistic weapon, except without the explosion.
Right.
So, I mean, why wouldn't Covenant ships start using Mac Cannons? Because they're crazy effective.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just kind of that age-old kind of sci-fi combative type thing where you have energy-based weapons on the alien side, and then you have the projectile weapons on the human side.
Yeah. I wonder what the next set of weapons is going to be. Like, what is the next category of weird weapons that they could make? Like, acid weapons?
That would be interesting.
Acidic weaponry.
I don't know. I mean, energy is one of those things where you kind of, it's
corrosive.
Like...
corrosive. Yeah.
It goes to the most efficient kind of ordeal. And methods of storing energy is kind of getting smaller and smaller and cheaper. You can't really go smaller and cheaper with a bullet. Although making a bullet is pretty, I mean, making it in bulk is pretty cheap, probably.
Well, I mean, especially in space where they have access to all of, you know, the metals.
Materials to make it, yeah. So just from materials perspective, it's definitely easier to make all the projectile weapon stuff over finding energy sources to kind of modify and build towards energy weapons.
Yep.
Okay. Do you want to pick one to... Or have you picked one yet? I can keep on going on mine.
Keep going. I'll try to pick one. Okay. Most of these that you're picking are the ones that I would have picked. Kind of the meaningful ones that actually pertain to the franchise.
I'll throw a few your way then. DHG SIUL S249. Not sure what the DHG would stand for, but he asks, did Beamish survive the attack on Corbulo Academy using his mighty mop? So if you guys don't remember... Frankie played a janitor, and his name was Beamish. So, Frankie's answer is, he survived a massive slipspace jump outside of a cryotube with nothing legal to eat, He'll survive a glassing. In fact, being Scottish, he's probably already been glassed.
I was not aware that he survived a slipspace journey outside of a cryotube. So, fun facts.
Fun facts.
Fun facts.
Space mops.
That's what Lasky has to do on a regular basis. Because he can't go into cryo. He's got the cryo sickness, like, real bad.
Yeah, I forget what they call it.
It's some weird...
Some weird long scientific name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I also highlight the one right below it, if you wanted to read that one.
All right. Nice and short. I picked one, but that was way down, so I got to go up a little bit. Okay, what is your favorite moment in Halo, be it in the novels, games, or any kind of media? Frankie says, you haven't seen it yet, but I have. So it's in Halo 5, his favorite moment. Yep. Well, not necessarily. He says we haven't seen it.
It could be in Halo 6, we know.
Yep.
Or an offshoot of Halo. Or like the Master Chief Halo, that is. It would still be Halo, but it would be an offshoot.
Well, maybe in the Halo TV series. Maybe in the comics that are coming out.
Halo Wars 2, possibly. I'm just throwing possibilities out there.
I know. I'm just trying to think of like crazy stuff it could be.
Books.
Yep, books. A t-shirt, maybe.
I'm not exactly sure how a t-shirt would convey the most important moment in Halo, but okay.
You never know.
Because I would feel that Halo would... A shirt would reference something that would be in the franchise, not necessarily you have to have the shirt in order to get this one tiny bit of franchise information.
Yeah.
At least I don't see how that would work.
Maybe if you buy the t-shirt, it comes with a little card that has a hint as to what's coming up in Halo 5.
Ooh.
So you have to buy the shirt to know what it is. Except you don't, because as soon as one person buys the shirt, they'll just post a hint online.
Yep.
Here's a question from Frozen4S. Any chance of an in-game ranking system in Halo Xbox One? And Frankie says there's always a chance. So maybe you'll be able to see your rank a la Halo 2? Maybe? Possibly?
I would assume so, yes.
There's a chance. I like to see my rank. That's always fun. I mean, then you're always going to have, you know, boosters and things like that. Those are always going to exist. So those exist now. I mean, to a lesser extent with CSR, because you can't really see it. But, I mean, there's always going to be somebody trying to...
Well, the emphasis is a lot weaker
in
Halo 4 because it's not in-game.
Yeah.
But I think for something like that to thrive, to really have the competitive nature going, you have to have that in-game rank where you can instantly see, okay, this is how good this guy is. This game will determine how well I rank up to this guy, and depending on whether you do well or not, you get a good estimation or evaluation of where your skill actually is compared to everyone else. There's always a chance. Well, that's pretty much saying, yes, it's going to be in there, but we can't say anything yet because we haven't said anything yet, kind of thing.
But it also gives them room to not do it. You know, they can always say, well, we just said there was a chance. We never, you know, made you a promise, right?
Right, but it's likely something that they're going to do.
Well, I kind of hope so, really. I mean, it really doesn't matter to me that much, but it's nice to be able to see how you're progressing and have something to work towards. I'm going to enjoy the game anyway. I mean, I don't play games to see a number next to my name, but it's still fun.
But it still gives you that competitive edge, though.
Yep.
Which would be nice to be back in the game and have it like Halo 3 and Halo 2. So the next question I have selected is from Austin7934, and he asks, after creating your first Halo as a brand new studio and taking on one of the largest franchises, what would you say was the biggest success and failure with Halo 4? And Frankie replies, like any new studio, we had plenty of failures. Our biggest success will be accepting them and learning from them. I think that our growing understanding of this audience and ourselves and the new platform will stand us in good stead.
Yeah.
So, essentially what that kind of boils down to is we made a lot of mistakes with Halo 4, and we acknowledged that, and we're really trying to listen to feedback to make sure that we get Halo 5 right into where the fans want it to be. So
I want to believe that they really acknowledge their failures. I mean, there is a certain set of people, and I'm not saying this is 343. I'm just saying that they exist out there who, no matter how many times they fail or whatever, you know, they put out a crappy product, no matter how much you tell them about how their product is wrong, they won't fix it. They are stubborn and they believe that the product is great, it's fine the way it is, and the problem is with you, the consumer. But, and that was kind of one of the things that 343 did after Halo 4 came out that it kind of irritated people. What they said, it basically, that they'd made these changes to Halo 4, and the problem was with the fans, really. I mean, when you go back to these kind of these interviews, not interviews, but panels that people like Josh Holmes did. Do you remember that? I don't even remember where it was, but Josh Holmes did some sort of panel.
It was that Comic-Con?
Oh, it was, GDC.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
The GDC one.
The one with the wheelchair.
It just kind of irks people. I mean, the things like when they said that they had a model of Halo that was closer to, you know, traditional Halo, and they just completely scrapped it. I mean, that's kind of attitude that irks people, and I hope that they legitimately see now that traditional Halo is kind of what people want. They like Halo because they like Halo. They don't want it to be Call of Duty. They don't want it to, you know, change too much. I mean, I realize you got to change some things. You got to keep it fresh, but maybe, and especially now with the hires they've made with Ghost AAMI and you know, Bravo and these professionals.
Ghost isn't And then 343 employee.
They didn't hire him?
No.
Maybe I'm crazy. Did they?
No, they just worked with him on the competitive settings. He's not actually.
I thought they brought him in to work on competitive Halo and Halo 4 or Halo 5.
Well, so he was working to get the competitive game types in there, but he wasn't working for 343 to do that. He was doing that on his own time.
All right. I guess I'm just nuts then. But the point is, it work towards making a highly competitive Halo multiplayer and the people will come back. If you can accept that Halo 4's multiplayer was not as competitive as people would have liked, then you can fix it and you can get people back.
Yeah, I kind of don't like exactly how that sounds, but you kind of have it right on the head right there. It's a matter of kind of having an equality between the developers and the consumers, because it is the developer's game. They develop the game that they want to make, and we in turn support the game with buying it with our money if we like it or not.
Well, yeah.
So it's I mean, you do have to play towards the community and in some respects, but you do have to leave some creative freedom to the developers to kind of push the game ahead in the way that they feel they want to. And I think they kind of figured that they don't have as much freedom to do that with the Halo franchise as they originally thought. And they're going to definitely dial back on that because they still want it to be a successful game.
Well, here's the thing. You can put out whatever you want. That's the great thing about your creative mediums. You can do whatever you want. You can put anything out there and it's the free market. People will either buy it or they won't buy it. The thing with a big franchise like Halo, though, is that it's out there to make money. Microsoft doesn't pay 343 to make art. They've paid 343 to make money. And part of making money is understanding that you have to give the consumer what they want to a certain extent. Now, I realize that growing the franchise means adding new creative features and things like that. But at the same time, you also have to take your consumers' wants and desires into account. It's not like painting and things where it's like the difference between commissioned art and just something that you draw or paint on your own that you can put out there and people will either buy it or not buy it. If you get commissioned to make something, you have to make it the way the person that paid you to do it wants it done. Now they might give you creative freedom to do it whatever way you want to do it or whatever, but there's still certain, if you don't do it the right way, you're not going to make money. And that's the thing with Halo 4. They found that they put out multiplayer the way they wanted it, They created it. That was their baby. 343 took Halo and made it their own, and that's why we got Halo 4 multiplayer. And it's good multiplayer. I still like playing Halo 4. But the numbers don't lie. The populations in Halo 4 are dismal, especially when you compare them to the numbers that Halo 2 and Halo 3 were seeing. And, even Halo Reach to a certain extent.
Right.
And, you have to take that into account. If you start losing too many people, the franchise is just going to die. Eventually, Microsoft's going to say, this ain't making enough cash. We got to cut our losses and make something else. We got to put our money where it is going to make cash.
Well, Halo 4 definitely sold, but it didn't keep people around.
Yeah, that's the point, though, and that's the fear. People bought Halo 4 not knowing what they were, necessarily going to get. They had played Halo 3 and Halo Reach. Most of them, there weren't as many people that played Halo Reach. There were probably a lot of people that went directly from Halo 3 to Halo 4. And if you went from Halo 3 thinking that you're going to get a Halo 3 experience and then you're playing Halo 4 and it's completely different, you might not come back for Halo 5. And so now the onus is on 343 to say, hey, look, we understand why you didn't necessarily enjoy what we gave you. We're fixing that. We're changing it up a little bit now. It's going back to the way it was. If you liked Halo 3, this is going to be similar. I'm not asking for just a straight, port of Halo 3 over onto Xbox One. Nobody's asking for that. There's going to be things about Halo 5 that are going to be different. And there's going to be things about Halo 5 that they've transferred over from Halo 4. Sprint is probably still going to be in Halo 5.
Which not too many people have a problem with that. There's a group that does, but they're not too many. I think it's more of a minority in that regard.
I think you might see less armor mods, but they'll probably still be there. Then things like the cosmetic changes. People love the cosmetic. Not everybody, but I like the cosmetic options in Halo 4. I enjoy being able to customize my Spartan and make him look different from other Spartans. That's cool. And there are ways that you can continue to, add more customization to Spartans and things like that are cosmetic. And personally, I would like cosmetic changes, more cosmetic changes in Halo 5 than pure gameplay customization options. Because that's the thing about Call of Duty. Call of Duty got popular because you could completely customize the way that you play Call of Duty. You can choose your weapon. You can choose the modifications on the weapon. Stuff like that. With Halo, I don't like the idea of people being able to choose, what they have when they spawn into the game. It just didn't feel like Halo to me. Especially when you've been playing Halo since... I haven't been playing since the beginning, but I played back in, the Halo 2 online days back when it was real popular. And you've been playing Halo multiplayer for years, and then Halo 4 comes out, which is completely different because they've added these customization options that they've kind of seen Call of Duty do. And it's a little disheartening. It's kind of like, first of all, it's like a concession that Call of Duty has become more popular than Halo. And that's just a fact. The numbers prove that Call of Duty currently is more popular than Halo. And it's when Call of Duty Modern Warfare come out, it was, it blew up. It's a huge franchise. Call of Duty still makes loads and loads of money, even though it has a different developer. Basically they did the exact same thing that Halo did in switching over developers, except that was a much messier process for Activision. But I'm not saying that, they should let consumers choose what Halo 5 is going to be like, but they should definitely see what people are complaining about and figure out ways to kind of rein that in and improve to the people that left in Halo 4 that they can come into Halo 5 and they're going to enjoy it more than Halo 4. If you didn't like Halo 4, You're going to like Halo 5, we promise. Just show me something that proves that.
Well, I mean, that only goes so far, though. You can definitely see changes that are going to be made, but it's not kind of affirming until you actually get your hands on it. And that's where I think a beta would really come into play.
Oh, yeah.
But kind of working on the whole feedback thing and kind of acknowledging what has been kind of done with Halo and coming out and answering things. The next question that I have is right below it. A Polish Korean who's one of the staff over at Team Beyond or Go Beyond Entertainment. His question is, there's been a ton of feedback, both positive and negative, in regards to the direction that Halo 4's multiplayer took the franchise. What feedback have you taken to heart the most, and what changes has 343 made to their multiplayer philosophy and approach to reflect said feedback? And Frankie answers, I think that's probably the most important question for our community, and I think we'll start answering it honestly and directly in due time. So I won't touch on philosophy here, other than to say you'll see a lot of these learnings when we start showing things. There's no semantic dance I can do here that will satisfy every segment of our audience. There are just too many pitfalls and inter-community disagreements on what makes Halo multiplayer great. So we will be open and receptive and honest with ourselves. So I think that's all Frankie can say is, yeah, there's definitely lots of things that has gone on with Halo that people don't really like and will be coming out of the closet, so to speak, on things that we feel were not done justly for the game and things that we know that needs to be changed for the next Halo experience for multiplayer and the tricky thing of making it where it appeals to kind of the general audience of Halo, not necessarily one particular community or another. Because that's one of the other interesting things about the Halo community is it's so diverse and there are so many different opinions out there of things, of ways that Halo should be played. Now, there's a general consensus on a lot of different aspects with Halo and what Halo 4 has done. I think a almost global consensus is on the bolt shot. having that as a starting weapon. I think that's on a lot of people's books, and Ordnance is kind of up there, not quite, but there is definitely a general consensus on certain aspects of Halo that should be kept in there and should be taken out. But when you get to a little more of the minor things with Halo, or not such big topics, there's a lot of disagreements and differences between many different Halo communities. And that's going to be one of the tricky things that 343 is going to have to do with Halo 5, is really strip Halo multiplayer down to its core and add things on top of that experience that will enhance matchmaking to where it still feels like Halo, but give people the options to go and create their custom game types and maps that you can do for custom games on the kind of player-to-player side of the house. So keep all the options in there, but really nail down the matchmaking experience. Because if you think about what people go in and play Halo for, most of the time it's matchmaking. There's definitely a lot of communities go out there and do custom games, and there's a few that primarily just stick to the campaign, and they get Halo because they want to play the story. But the majority of people that play Halo are playing matchmaking, and they really need to nail down that experience on what is considered core across the greatest audience in the Halo community. And that's going to be the toughest thing, I think, that they have ahead of them for developing Halo 5.
It's... You can't please all the people all the time. That's the problem.
No, you can't. So, but, I mean, there's a way to please the majority of the people.
Yeah.
And that's where them kind of keeping an open and receptive and honest ear out there and then coming out and basically laying out what they feel about Halo and what they feel that they messed up and things of that nature. Frankie just said in the answer that I posted that we're going to be answering all those questions honestly and directly in due time. So it's definitely something that is of concern to them that they need to kind of get off their chest and be upfront with the community on decisions that they've made and things that they did to the franchise, and that they'll be open and receptive to feedback. Now, there are going to be people that are going to be haters out there and just kind of rail on 343 for the stuff they did, but for the people that really care about the franchise, it's going to be constructive criticism and feedback that will help build the franchise and bring back some of the balancing and core aspects of Halo that people really enjoy.
Really,
it's
for me,
it's going to be a long process.
For me, it was mainly just weapon spawns. What you have when you get into the game. I mean, the idea of spawning into an objective game type with vehicles and having a plasma pistol that you can just whip out and at range, you know, stop a vehicle in its tracks, essentially, you know, just setting it up to get destroyed instantly is that was kind of annoying. I mean, especially in a game where vehicles were very fun. I mean, Halo made vehicles fun in first-person shooters, at least on consoles. I can't speak for PC because I didn't play them that much. I know the vehicles are a big part of Battlefield, but I don't play Battlefield that often. But the
vehicles are definitely one of the things for me.
Yeah, go ahead and talk. I got an issue I got to deal with right now.
Okay. So the next question that I have here that I want to kind of cover real quick. It doesn't come from anybody that's listed. It's just a generic question out there. Has there been any discussion in regards to the merit of returning to a veto-style voting system as opposed to sticking with the voting style from Reach and Halo 4? And Frankie's answer, I will say that dedicated servers and cloud technology will give us options that expand upon that premise, and the former rigidity. Wow, I didn't even know that was a word. Of matchmaking, period. So they're looking at different voting options for Halo 5 in the kind of grand scheme of things of how people will be able to choose maps and go into games. I have a feeling with dedicated servers, we'll see kind of a server browser type thing possibly pop up where you can filter between different kind of game modes, maps, player counts, all that kind of stuff for the next generation of Halo. And it's a little bit more of a PC-centric style of how to jump into multiplayer games, but I feel that with the power of the Xbox One platform and service that is out there, it's going to have those options available in Halo 5. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Battlefield does it, and it works pretty well. Call of Duty still does the matchmaking style thing, but it has a one or other option for voting. But I think when it comes to the voting process, Reaches was pretty solid because it had different kind of a combination of the choosing and the veto. So for those of you who hadn't played Reach for any particular reason, like maybe Halo 4 was your first game or you just went from Halo 3 to Halo 4 and you hadn't played it, Reach's voting style was you had a list of three maps and game type combination. And you could either vote for one of those or you could veto. And then you would have a second round that would pop up. And then you would choose from the remaining three. So it was a little more expansive than the Halo 3 where you just had one and you had the chance to veto it or not. And then you get another one. And this was actually three options that you could veto and get another one. And there was certain playlists after a while with Reach that you could veto two times. And then get a last set of map and game type combinations. So as far as kind of the voting system, I feel Reach's was probably the best voting system that we've had so far, but with the power and the infrastructure of the Xbox One and its service, I think we may see options to kind of filter out which kind of games that we want to play, whether it be just go into quick match like you would normally do for matchmaking or filter it by game type or map or player count. Something like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they start funneling different playlists basically into one massive mega playlist and then allowing the veto system to let you choose. I mean, that'd be kind of annoying. I mean, it might not work, but if you think about it, if you look at all the playlists, each playlist doesn't have a whole lot of people in it, except for like Team Slayer and Big Team Battle. And then certain playlists that just blow up because they're popular for some reason. But if you consolidate those, then the playlist numbers look a lot better on charts.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing, too, is the whole server browser thing, I think would work well if there were more people on playing Halo. So I'm not sure if that's actually a good kind of road to go down right now with how low the population is for Halo 4. But if there's like a great response from the beta and have it like a like an additional capability that's kind of being coded on the side, and then to see feedback from what people will think, then I think the server browser option may be something that will kind of help people match up better and really find a more enjoyable match for Halo.
Yeah. I want to see kind of a, not a focus, I want to have fun in objective game types again. For some reason, there are fun games in Halo 4 that I enjoy, like Ricochet. That's a fun objective game type. That's the best game type they've made in years. I mean, even that is a Bungie quality game type that even Bungie could not make. I mean, that's not fair to 343, because 343 came up with it, not Bungie. That's great. Keep up stuff like that. But I would like to see them kind of focus on making objective game types fun like they were back in Halo 2 and Halo 3 to a certain extent. Because, I mean, objective game types, especially the flag game types, were just so much fun in Halo 2. Some of my best Halo memories are playing single flag on, like, Headlong. You know, and that was a crazy fun game type. It was crazy and frantic, and there were so many different ways to run the flag, but everybody, you know, went down the middle, and then there was this huge mess in that middle kind of open area.
Or like 4-hour games of CTF on coagulation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just stuff like that, but it was fun. I mean, it took a while, and it wasn't as fast-paced as Halo 4 would like it to be, but just because a game isn't necessarily fast doesn't mean it's not fun. And especially in objective game types where you kind of want people following a set of not rules, but you want them to kind of follow a battle plan. You know, the great thing about objective game types is when you get a plan going and you execute great on it. When whenever you're playing on Coag or Blood Gulch or whatever, you know, having a Warthog driver in the back waiting to get the flag over to the other side, and then having your team, you know, making sure that the Warthog isn't getting shot at too much, and just a well-executed plan was so satisfying back in Halo 2 and Halo 3.
Right.
And yeah, I didn't feel that in Reach or Halo 4, and then I want that back, you know.
Yeah, that's going to be a tricky thing, too, because of how much the game has evolved.
Flying Pineapple in the Twitch chat says you could friggin' drop the flag, too. Yes, yeah. I want to drop the flag. It makes absolutely no sense that you cannot drop the flag. From a logical standpoint or a gameplay standpoint, why? I mean, you gave me a pistol, but that's not... I don't want a pistol. I want to be able to drop the flag.
Yeah, I think it needs to go back to... If you're holding the flag, you don't have a weapon for normal CTF. Now, I mean, there are the custom ones where you can still fire if you're holding the flag, but I think it needs to go back to the old style where if you have the flag, you're running the flag.
Of course, one of the problems with dropping the flag is that you can, you know, do crazy flag tricks and stuff. I remember on Colossus on Halo 2, a glitch where you could take the flag, and then the conveyor belt that was going down the center of the map had some sort of weird physics glitch, and you would drop the flag from the top down to the conveyor belt, and it would bounce off the conveyor belt all the way up to your base on the other side.
Well, that's a glitch.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying like stuff like that kind of ruined CTF. I mean, they even fix that too eventually, but I can see where 343 said, you know what? To avoid just any kind of glitches people could do, we'll just take it out of the game completely. No flag dropping, but it made the game more fun to be able to drop the flag. And I mean, because you could drop the flag and then set up to defend it for a second. You know, if you have people chasing you, you could drop it, get into position, throw grenades, you know, fight off your attackers and then grab it again. Or you could, you know, throw it down to a teammate. And I mean, throwing your flag down to people was a legitimate strategy. I mean, that was one of the points. If you're on top of Headlong and you're on the bridge and you drop it down to the person below and they got the Warthog down there, they could pick it up, you know, drive it away.
Well, one of the reasons that they said they did the whole you get a pistol and you can't drop the flag at PAX Prime last year is to kind of enforce the teamwork aspect, where if you have a person that's going for the flag, you have to have your team to help, kind of help you escort it back to your base.
That seems like kind of a false. I'm not going to say that that's their gameplay decisions. I can't speak to any of them because I wasn't in those meetings.
Right.
But being able to drop the flag, it seems like that made it even
kind of
more important. I mean, it was even more important to have a team going because you could, you know, throw the flag to each other, you know, drop it to each other, set up for plans and stuff like that. Like
flag,
I was saying,
drop flag taken. Flag,
yeah,
there's ways
to fix that. Don't do that. Just have it say like flag picked or dropped and taken like maybe once, and then
it
stops
fixed it for
5 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think they did it like 3 seconds or something like that.
That was one of the best parts of Halo 2, though, hearing that sound over and over and over again.
Just hear over and over and over again. Well, Halo 3. I guess it might have been in Halo 2 as well.
Yeah.
I didn't play Halo 2 that much.
I think it was. My memory of 2006 is so far away that I can't remember what Jeff Stitzer said. But man, just the halcyon days, man. The good old objective game types in Halo 2. That's what I'd like them to focus on. And that's just me. You get back to kind of vehicle gameplay in those big team matches.
I wish there would be a little bit more big team for that in that regard.
Bring back the Scorpion tank. I don't want to use the Mantis. I mean, you can have the Mantis and the Scorpion tank in the same map. I mean, especially on Xbox One. I mean, there's no reason for them to not coexist. I mean, essentially, they took the Mantis and substituted it for the tank.
Yeah, pretty much.
In Halo. I mean, it's
pretty much.
Because, I mean, it is, technically, it can get into smaller spaces and things that a tank couldn't, and then they could make bigger maps that didn't have these huge open spaces like COAG. But I like the tank.
Yeah, I do too. I think vehicles are kind of really underused in Halo 4, to be honest.
Maybe there's like a new style of UNSC tank that's like smaller, but, you know, similarly effective.
Oh, gosh. We're going to have the Mongoose version of the tank.
Now, I've always said that the Mongoose needs like a railgun or something on the front. You know, something to give me an offensive option, because there's no reason to.
The only thing is, if you had, depending on how powerful it is, you would be basically just kicking backwards in the Mongoose.
That'd be funny, though. Like, if you shoot, like, you kind of stop for a second because of the back force. I mean, they've got different things that happen to vehicles. I mean, your vehicle runs slower in water, for instance.
Yeah, that's true. It would be an interesting idea to kind of run through. Let's move on to some other questions.
All right.
If you want to pick another one.
All right, moving on. Are there any major Easter eggs left undiscovered in Halo 4? From Snoop Rocket. Frankie says, major, no. Minor, yes. So we've found most of the big eggs. We had to have some hints from 343 themselves, but we found them. As far as minor eggs, I'm not sure what they would consider a minor Easter egg.
Well, there could be, I mean, depending on how you look at it, there's going to be tons of minor Easter eggs in there.
Oh, yeah, just little things that, you know, whoever was working on that portion of the game during development decided, you know, just put that in there, you know, cool little,
right.
Little fun
Unless
thing.
You have access to the code or the Halo Bible, then you're probably not going to ever find them.
No. There's probably minor Easter eggs in every single Halo game that we haven't found yet. And maybe even major Easter eggs. I mean, I don't know if Bungie's spoken about that. That'd be interesting. If I could talk to Bungie, I would ask them if there were any that we haven't really found yet, like big Easter eggs. I mean, not even big, just like medium to large size Easter eggs. I'm sure there's little stuff, but.
So, one of the questions that came up during while I was at the Bungie party was, are there any eggs, Easter eggs left in Halo that haven't been found? And it was a resounding yes.
Oh, so, that's good. I like that. I like secrets in my video games. It's always cool when there's like a game that's like 2 decades old or a decade old and people find like some big Easter egg in it. It's always an exciting moment. I was extremely disappointed in the Easter eggs in Halo 4, though, because they were mainly just weapon drops. just weird weapon drops and
or things just kind of placed on the geometry of the map, certain textures.
Yeah.
Or like the monkey dolls in Halo 3.
But I mean, think about how big of a discovery the skulls were in Halo 2. I want Easter eggs on that caliber.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like original Easter egg ideas, it's kind of growing thin in the manner of speaking, unless you're just talking about putting a particular model or art piece in somewhere random. But in terms of like hiding weapons and skulls and things, I mean, we've seen that kind of stuff. I don't know what the next kind of evolution of that would be, though.
I don't know. I think you could make new skulls, too. Like different skulls with different effects. Think about visual effects. What if you picked up a skull that made everything have like a juicy filter on it? Like super saturated in a campaign? That'd be cool to me.
So like a juicy filter of the blind skull?
Yeah, like what if there were like filter skulls? Like you have a black and white skull or a next gen skull. Always like
that.
We
might have to think about that one a little bit more before we kind of dive into that one.
I like Easter eggs, but I mean,
everyone likes Easter eggs.
Oh yeah,
because it's cool little things that you can go and find in the game. It's like a unmarked achievement.
I also feel like it fosters community because you have all these people trying to work together to find it.
Like, we've never figured out what the buttons on Halo 2 do.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone's ever figured that out.
Maybe that's one of the major Easter eggs that Bungie was talking about at the party. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe it unlocks, like, a second campaign. Like, I always thought that the craziest possible Easter egg that a developer could put in, and I know it's impossible because it would take up way too many resources or anything, but something that, like...
It would be noticed.
A extremely... hard to find Easter egg that like activates a mission after the last mission. Like there's an extra mission, you know, afterwards that you can only get to if you activate a certain like extremely obscure Easter egg. Of course, that's never going to happen, but I can dream.
That would be interesting.
Like something secret, like something, you know, within that mission that you could learn about the Halo universe, it would just change the entire way you view Halo.
I don't know about, like, complete overhaul of what people think about Halo, but...
Like it turns out that Cortana was working with the Covenant the entire time.
Wow. Okay. Okay, we're moving on. I have one here from K. Narano, he asks, what are you planning to do with the Arbiter and that of the Sangheili in both the story and gameplay? Freaky says, can't talk about it, but a lot. So, Arby stuff, and actually we'll see Arbiter stuff in Halo Escalations, I believe, too.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be kind of a major character in that series, so, I mean, lots of stuff. I mean, we know Arbiter is going to be a major role in the future of the Halo franchise, just from seeing that comic stuff. So definitely something to look for.
I got a question. What would you have your Arbiter do?
Wart. In terms of showing them in game or just for the story aspect of Halo?
The story in the game, you know, wherever, like what would you have Arbiter do next in the Halo universe? Like, what's his next big role?
It's hard to say, because we still have Mortal Dictata coming out, and I feel that we'll have a lot of revelations in there with how the struggle between the humans and the Covenant has been developing over the last two books in the Kilo 5 trilogy, and kind of tying into some of the stuff with Halo 4. So I'm hesitant to answer that, knowing that there's other stuff out there that I don't know yet. But from what I can kind of draw from what I know now, have the Arbiter really try to calm the civil war between the rest of the Covenant. I think that's going to be the big point of what the Arbiter is going to have to do in this new age for the Covenant and for the Sangheili, is quelling the Civil War or reuniting the Sangheili race.
Yeah. Or a love interest for Master Chief now that Cortana's gone. They're roughly the same size, same
height. You really want that Halo dating sim, don't you?
Yeah. I really, really do. And they keep, you know, teasing me. I mean, I know we're never going to get a dating sim, but I know it. I know that Lasky and Palmer are going to get together, and they keep teasing me with these images of, like, the comic and stuff where they're, like, together, you know, holding weapons, fighting. And then in Halo 4 where, you know, she's like, it wasn't in the campaign, it was in Spartan Ops, but, like, she's talking to Lasky, and she always calls him Tom and stuff. I mean, very informal with him, you know, in a way that only lovers would be in the military. Well, I mean, not necessarily only lovers, but you kind of get the feeling that there's something there, you know, even though she's like 3 feet taller than he is. I'm going to be disappointed if that story doesn't go anywhere, because they already set up this love story for Lasky, and then it was tragic because he loses his love, you know, during the invasion of Corbulo Academy. And, you know, now he's just kind of, you know, floating around in space. He's the captain of the, you know, largest ship in the UNSC fleet. And, you know, he's a powerful dude. You know, being a captain ain't no, you know, simple thing. I mean, if anybody was qualified to date a woman of Sarah Palmer's caliber, it would be Thomas Lasky.
Oh, boy. I think Jess would have a lot of laughs after that. I'll definitely have to send this one then. Question for you, Brent. Do you have another one that you want to read off?
Yes. Let's see. I had one, and then I lost my place in these questions. The bad thing about this update, or the Halo Bulletin, is that these questions all kind of merge together at some point. Here it is. Will Halo Spartan Assault take advantage of the Xbox One impulse triggers from Fire Ghost 90? Frankie says, not particularly, but the next Halo FPS will. Now, my understanding of the impulse triggers, and again, I don't have an Xbox One. Dusty, you do. But it's basically just rumble feature in the triggers, right?
Yeah, it's haptic feedback inside the triggers.
So is it like, does it enhance the experience? Like, is this going to annoy me when...
So I haven't played the, unless Battlefield 4 uses it, I haven't played a game that actually uses that haptic feedback yet.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't felt it yet, so I don't know, but it just seems like every time I pull the trigger and I get the feedback, it's going to maybe mess up my aim a little bit. But I mean, the rumble in the 360 controller doesn't really mess it up, and those are closer to the actual analog sticks.
I don't know if it's a rumble in there or if it's just like force feedback. Because, I mean, if you think about when you pull the trigger, you have tension against it. So, I mean, there may be, like, feedback on, like, kind of resisting movement. I don't remember if it's actual, like, resisting of movement or forcing of movement, or if it's just the rumble pack in the controllers. I have to go find that video again of the breakdown. But, I mean, if they do it right, if they code the feedback right, then I think it's going to be a more immersive and quote-unquote realistic experience, even though people may not necessarily like it, but the sense of realism, I think, would kind of be appealing to some people.
Yeah. I want to feel it. I want to have an Xbox One controller in my hand just to finally see the difference between the Xbox 360 controller and that one. I've heard some people say that they like the 360 controller better.
Yeah, I like the 360 controller better.
Yeah, I guess I'll just have to find out for myself.
Because I did a little video review on it, and the controller's a little bit smaller. The button layout's practically the same. It's a little smaller face on the controller as well, but it's not as comfortable for me to hold, and the thumbsticks are way too loose for me.
Right.
But a lot of people seem to like the new controller. I prefer the old one just because of the comfort and because it's a little bit bigger for my hands. And I wish they would actually come out with different sizes of controllers, because there's so many different types of gamers out there. You have young gamers, you have older gamers, you have gamers with gigantic hands, you have gamers with thick hands, and it would be, I think, a good way to get more gamers involved and potentially to have people buy more controllers, to be honest.
Yeah. Do you think they'll release like a Xbox One controller S at some point?
I honestly don't know. I don't think they have any plans to make different sizes of controllers, to be honest.
Well, I mean, not even sizes. I mean, that was the big deal with the old Duke on Xbox One. I mean, when they went to change it was a smaller controller because the Duke was
gigantic.
I mean, that was humongous. That's why they call it the Duke. I mean, anytime you have a controller that you're willing to name the Duke, that's pretty big. But not even a size thing, just a reorganizing of the hand position on the controller and you know, clickiness on the buttons and problems people have with that stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely the jump from the Xbox to the Xbox 360 controller was definitely significant.
Oh, yeah. It's
The 360, the Xbox One, there are a lot of minor changes, but those minor changes for me kind of add up to where it's not as an enjoyable experience using the Xbox One controller over the 360.
Yep.
So that's just me, though. Another question from me. This one is also unnamed. It starts off, did you initially plan to develop Halo 2 and the rest of the trilogy? Frankie responds, the game was developed like any new franchise with the hope that it would be loved and the possibility that there could be another. And the humility to know that most new franchises don't make it. So, in other words, they kind of made the game to see how well it would go and primarily make it for themselves. And if it did well, then they had their sights on a new one. If they didn't, well, they made a game. And that's that.
Yep. Just like you said, any new franchise, just got to throw it at the wall and see what sticks. And yep. Halo stuck.
Like the sticky. Heyo.
All right. How did you balance enemies and weapons for gameplay and story? For instance, Promethean Knights use highly advanced weaponry capable of disintegrating and piercing through armored marines. They can, however, die by salvos of M118 bullets. In gameplay, the Sangheili have a quicker and stronger melee than Knights sometimes. What do you comment on it? From Eric Eboo, Frankie says, one simple example is using hard light as projectiles that can compare with human projectiles. But really, the answer is a massive chart and years of conversations and comparisons, and some of the differences are designed to be aesthetic as well as balanced for gameplay. So basically, you don't try to read too much into the little things in the Halo franchise, because it's not necessarily in there for canon. Sometimes it's just in there because video games have to be fun. They kind of run off rule of fun. I mean, it's, you know, canon and logic are great, but if you follow those to a T and it makes your game not fun, then they're not worth, you know, going that route. You know, whatever you can do to make a game more fun without just completely ruining the logic, you go with it, you know? I mean, if Promethean Knights were just these invincible kind of super creatures that nobody could beat ever, I mean, there would be no Halo, or Halo 4 at least. There'd be no point. Humanity would just be destroyed. That'd be the end of it.
Yeah, pretty much. And that kind of goes, I mean, if you want to talk about the whole canonical thing, that question earlier that we had about using projectile weapons versus energy weapons. It's like, yep. There's a certain convenience to having people be able to identify with the franchise and what's going on in the game versus what could potentially be out there in terms of technology that could be used by human society. So it's that balance of canon versus gameplay and familiarity and really letting players dive into that experience.
Yeah.
So,
did you like the Promethean weaponry?
They were cool concepts. mean, light rifle, I mean, it's another rifle. So, not much to say on that one. The suppressor, I mean, it's another assault. It's the weakest weapon if you kind of think about it. Well, I don't know. The plasma rifle, which isn't the plasma rifle, I forget what it's called.
Storm rifle.
That's it, storm rifle. I think that one's actually the worst weapon in the game. I think they've said that too. But it was nice to see equivalent counterparts to Covenant class and Human class weapons, because you had a rocket launcher, you had a shotgun, you had a pistol, you had a assault rifle, you had a sniper rifle, and you had a grenade. So, I mean, it makes sense to have the Promethean versions of things kind of resemble what humans have, because of, like, humans are supposed to be the next successors to the Forerunners and everything. So, I personally didn't have any bad feelings other than, of course, the bolt shot. And I think everyone kind of has a problem with the bolt shot. So, next question I'm going to read off. It comes from Moa Herder, and he writes in, how was Hesduros left out of the loop to the point where it is still very religious and adopted its own traditions and technologies? Frankie responds, you will definitely find out more about the intra-covenant disputes and religious differences in the future. So Hesduros, if I remember right, was the planet that Jul Umdama actually escaped to in Thursday War. And it was another Covenant sect that really didn't have any interactions with group that didn't have any interaction pretty much with the Covenant as it stood, and still held on to the faiths and traditions of the Forerunners and had their own kind of technology tree and different religious traditions. So, I mean, according to Frankie, we'll see more of that pop up, and I'm betting we'll see quite a bit of it in Mortal Dictata, which would be my guess.
Yeah.
So, you have another one, Brent? I have two more in my list.
Let's see. Go ahead with your two.
Okay. Next one I have is also anonymous. The question is, are there any driving ideas and inspirations behind the redesign of the Covenant look? Frankie responds, the changing nature of their relationship with the galaxy and the reclaiming of their own identity outside the previous nature of the Covenant drive a lot of that, as well as, of course, as game tech and fidelity and modernization. So just kind of a few words on how they kind of changed up the Covenant look.
Yeah. I mean,
basically just evolving the franchise.
Right. Just saying, like, hey, this ain't the Covenant as it was in
my day. In my day.
Like in my day, Covenant used to go. The grunts do look a lot. I mean, not a hell of a lot different, but they look different in Halo 4.
Oh, there are people that would say they are significantly different.
Well, I mean, they are significantly different, but I mean, the shape and form and the general
idea.
It wasn't that big of a deal for me in Halo 4 because I didn't see really enough of the Covenant to care. It's mainly just Prometheans and the main campaign, except for the very first part, the first mission. I don't know. I mean, the differences, I don't know if I like them or dislike them. I'm just kind of apathetic. It's like, whatever.
I can understand for some people how the changes are kind of an adverse effect to it. But if you kind of take the reason behind them actually being a different sect and a different kind of group of Covenant that developed a little bit differently, I would take that as an answer. I mean, 4.5 years is you can't really change that much of a species from a physical appearance that much, but I'm personally not that offended by those changes either. I think for the most part people aren't too much, but I do definitely understand for the people that do have problems with it why they would have problems with it.
Yeah.
So my last one that I had marked down that I wanted to cover was another anonymous one. Starts out, will we see more development and humanization of the Covenant in the future, similar to what they received in Halo 2 and 3? Frankie responds, yes, and more alienization too. So I think the whole thing with the diplomatic relations between Lord Hood and the Arbiter is where we'll see the more humanizing of Covenant. And then we'll see the whole alienization part as Julum Dama and the other Covenant that have been kind of hinted at in the Kilo 5 trilogy, where they haven't had any interaction with the Covenant or the war that's been going on as well. So we'll see the extremes kind of pop out here, so to speak.
I want some new alien species added to the Covenant. That's what I want.
We have the Prometheans.
Yeah, but to me, the Prometheans are more robot than alien. I want to see organic style aliens with their own, you know.
Do you want to see them added to the Covenant, or do you want to see them as like a third party in the game?
Added to the Covenant, probably. I don't think there's room for a fourth aggressor in the war. I mean, there could be, but to me, that would just be kind of spreading the story thin. The whole point of the Covenant, the flood back.
I have a feeling we're going to have the Flood back.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's there. I mean, the Flood is an important part of Halo. I would be surprised if it didn't come back in some fashion eventually in either Halo 5 or Halo 6, probably sooner than later, so I expect the Flood in Halo 5. But, I mean, the entire point of the Covenant is, you know, this group of aliens that are completely unlike each other, basically in a caste system where most of the species that join just join because they had to, or they would have been destroyed.
Pretty much.
So I could definitely see more alien species being kind of forced into the Covenant.
Well, but the Covenant largely is disbanding now.
Yeah,
the Brutes kind of not in there anymore. The Grunts and the Elites, they still kind of work together a little bit, but they're becoming more independent. The Jackals are still trying to steal stuff like crazy. But you have kind of all the different races of the Covenant trying to rebuild their own identities.
I could definitely see maybe Prometheans kind of co-opting different aliens. I mean, that's kind of the entire point of the Covenant. They followed the Forerunners to a religious zeal. So I could imagine the Didact, you know, coming back in whatever form he comes back in, getting more different aliens to join his side to fight off humanity. I just want to see different aliens. I mean, I don't even care about canon. I just like different aliens to shoot.
I think you can get those in other games too. You know that, right?
Yeah, but it's not Halo. I like Halo. That's the focus. I don't like other shooting games. I mean, the first-person shooters, I like first-person shooters, but really Halo's pretty much the only first-person shooter I can deal with nowadays. I don't like Call of Duty anymore. I just played Battlefield a little bit back, you know, on original Xbox. That was fun, but I didn't really get into it that much. Just not real big on first-person shooters in general, except for Halo. That's the one I like.
Interesting.
Here's one. Will the nearly 500-year gap of the Halo timeline be further explored? There's a lot of content that can be back there, from initial interplanetary conflicts to early human exploration and into the golden age of colonization, that can add significance to the story. From Anonymous, and Frankie says, potentially yes. So that period of time between now and 2552, They can cover all that. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be... The thing about Halo is aliens. And we didn't really...
It's Space Marines.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You could have the separatist thing going on. I mean, like the insurrectionist battles and stuff like that. But I mean, that's just not as interesting. I mean, I enjoy the Spartans. You know, I mean, I like the Spartans as a as both a gameplay device and a story device. You know, the idea of humans that can do what normal humans can't. And if you go back into that 500-year gap, they don't exist. The only things we would have is... I mean, you could show maybe the creation of the ODSTs. That'd be cool. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's an open book, essentially.
But, I mean, is there really that much there that it would just be really super interesting or add to the current Halo story?
Well, you have books like Contact Harvest.
Yeah, but I mean...
That's Johnson's story.
But I'm saying that's not like, you know, 200 years back.
No. It, essentially what it does is it leaves room for growth of the franchise. Now, is it something that people are going to be interested in? Probably not too many. I mean, it's going to be Halo stuff, so anything that's in the Halo universe, I would be probably interested in reading up or purchasing it. But as far as like being an interest to the general population of Halo fans, I could see ways of getting that done between that 500-year gap. And like you said, the kind of the creation of the ODSTs, the establishment of Oni, maybe the origin story of Halsey.
I've always wanted an Oni game, where I get to sneak around and spy on people. Be like NSA the video game. But in space!
Not touching that one. Not touching that one.
In space!
In space! Anywho. I got all my questions, unless you have any other ones.
That was about it.
Okay.
Those were the interesting questions, pretty much. Yeah.
There's lots of other ones on there, but not as interesting. I think.
They asked if Frankie ever wears a kilt. He says at weddings sometimes. I think he might be telling the truth, maybe. It's part of his Scottish heritage.
I wouldn't put it past him.
So that's cool. Yep. Most of this other stuff in here is asking about Frankie personally. What is Frankie's favorite game? He likes looping on ColecoVision.
Yeah, favorite game type is SWAT. So. Yeah. That wraps it up for the bulletin, for the Q&A part. Of course, we have the screenshots of the week that we can take a look at. And it's all holiday themed. So some interesting ones on here. There's a forge art of a reindeer. There's someone snowboarding. There's Christmas trees. There's a poinsettia, which actually it looks really cool. Lots of little different things on here. Not any one particular that stands out. I think poinsettia or the Halo snowman are probably my two favorites.
What's up with that like black smudge on Halo snowman? Or is it like just, a filter problem, or it's like this
it's
large?
It's probably just smoke from like a rocket.
Yeah, couldn't figure out why that was there. Yeah,
it's an explosion of some kind.
Poinsettia is cool looking though. That's probably the best one, in my opinion. That was a cool effect.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what that red. Oh, that's probably a oddball score. That's probably what that is. The little red effect on top.
Yeah, it's cool.
Interesting.
Snowboard's cool.
It is kind of cool. It would be a lot cooler if it was actually on snow and not just the light bridge from Meltdown. But yeah, so good stuff. Last notes from the bulletin. We have Rocket Race coming to the matchmaking playlist on Monday, on December 23rd. So if you want to get in your last moments of race before that switches over to Rocket Race, then make sure you hop in your matchmaking and do so. If not, then you can wait till Monday for that to drop in the playlists rotation. And, of course, we have Halo Spartan Assault coming to Xbox One on December 24th. So, I got some clarification from Jess, and they actually ended up clarifying this on their website, too. But you can get Halo Spartan Assault for a discounted price of $5 compared to the normal $15 if you have pre-bought the game on Windows 8 phone or any Windows 8 platform. So it could be the Surface, could be a Windows 8 PC, or your Windows Phone 8. So if you previously bought it on any one of those platforms, then you can buy Spartan Assault for $5 compared to the $15.
That's cool.
So pretty cool deal. Yeah. And unfortunately, today was the last day to do that. So, as of this recording. So if you're listening to this and you haven't bought it, then you're kind of out of luck. But if you did buy it, then good for you, because you can get it on the Xbox platforms for $5.
Yes.
And they just say that for the Xbox One. I'm assuming the same thing will be for Xbox 360, but my guess, and this is just a guess, this isn't for sure, but my guess would be is that the purchase of Spartan Assault is a separate purchase on the Xbox One and the 360. Just like you can't buy like Call of Duty Ghosts on demand on one side and then get it over on the other side. It doesn't work like that.
Oh, they will sell you Xbox 360 games on Xbox One. Just wait. No backwards compatibility, but they will sell it to you.
Do like you play the whole, it for a fee. What Nintendo did with the Wii stuff. Was it WiiWare? What was their like library of old games that they
Virtual Console?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
So we may see something like that. I don't anticipate it anytime soon.
Yeah.
Definitely not within the next year.
I think you'll see it within the next year. I think anytime Microsoft see an opportunity to make some cash, they'll do it. You might see I don't know what kind of... Really, there are no games on my Xbox 360 that I'd want to buy so I could play it on my Xbox One. Because, I mean, probably once I get an Xbox One, and it'll be, you know, sometime way far away from now, I'm going to be so bored of every game I've got on 360, I'll never want to play them again. I mean, really, other than Halo 3, I can't really see myself going back to any Xbox 360 game.
Well, I have tons of games in my backlog to play for the 360.
That's just for me. That's what I'm saying. I know, you know, there are going to be people out there that want to buy Xbox 360 games on their Xbox One, and Microsoft will give them that opportunity.
Let's just put it this way. Right now, I turn my Xbox One on about an average of maybe 2 or 3 times a week.
Well, that's for lack of games.
Well, yeah, it's lack of games on there. I mean, if it did support backwards compatibility, heck yeah, I'd be playing all my games on the Xbox One. But the games right now are on the current generation consoles, not the next gen consoles.
Well, yeah, because you got 6 years worth of backlog. Games.
Yeah,
of course they're gonna.
And Xbox for games with gold, great program. I played the Keflings game, A World of Keflings.
Yeah. I tried to get into that.
Last weekend. I booted up on Friday. I played for 6 hours, realized it was 4 o'clock in the morning, went to bed, woke up, and finished the game. Granted, I haven't played any of the DLC yet, but I'm not really planning on buying the DLC unless it comes on the sale, and I feel the urge to go play it. I have 4 more achievements to go get, but to 100% it with the original achievements, but I finished the game in 10 hours.
Yeah. Dead Rising 2 was pretty cool for free. Free games are always a little bit more fun because you didn't have to pay for them. The Shoot Mini Robots is the current promotion for Xbox Games for Gold or whatever. So go get that. I don't remember who put it out, but it's pretty fun. If you like games like Metal Slug, I haven't played Metal Slug in years, and it feels a lot like Metal Slug.
I have never heard of a game called Metal Slug.
Metal Slug is a 2D side-scrolling shooter where you run around and it's kind of like twin-stick shooter controls. You move with one stick and the aim with the other one, but it's 2D side-scrolling.
All right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So good stuff. Crackdown was on there. If you'd never played Crackdown before, that's a fantastic game. But I'd played Crackdown literally for at least 110 hours when it first came out. So when it came out for free, I was like, I'd sold my copy, so it was nice to have it, to play again. But then I started it back up, and I'm like, man, I've done all of this. there's nothing in this game that I have not done yet. I mean, what am I playing it for? But, you can't get it now because the promotion for it's over, but that was a great game for people that hadn't played it.
Yeah.
It was Magic the Gathering, and that 2013 came out. I enjoy playing Magic the Gathering on 360.
I've gone and downloaded all the free games so far. I haven't played them all, but I've gone and downloaded them.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what else they've come out with.
Gears.
Gears of War. Fable
3.
I should have downloaded it. Yeah, Fable 3. I tried getting into that. I did get into that for about 8 or 9 hours.
Disc if you want. I have that.
That's another game that I had already played through to completion and just didn't care to play it again. I played that one in Gears 2, and I didn't ever get around to renting Gears 3. So I had to go read the synopsis on the internet, find out what happened. But, just good stuff. The idea of getting games for being a gold subscriber, it was nice because for so long the PlayStation Plus people were like, yeah, well, we pay and we get free games every month. And, it was annoying. And we're like, yeah, well, we pay and we get Netflix access.
Yeah.
It was kind of ridiculous, too. I mean, they put Netflix behind the paywall. It's Netflix.
They actually had an update to their app. Just side note, they had an update to their app recently on the Xbox platform. It's kind of really different now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyways, it's kind of time to wrap up the show, but I wanted to kind of do a quick review of the year with Halo. So, of course, beginning of the year is when we had pretty much Halo still in the hot seat, with it kind of being released only a month and a half prior. So that's kind of January, and we saw lots of things come out in terms of lots of issues with the maps. Like, remember the Complex wall glitch?
No.
So there was a place on Complex in the, I think it's Blue Spawn? I forget which side spawns where, but it's the one that's the base that's closer to the cliff edge. I think that's Blue Base Spawn. But in one of the doorways, you could actually hop up in there and hide between the geometry. And whenever people would be playing oddball, you would jump in there and you would just camp with the ball and no one could get you unless you try to jump in there and kill them. So that was a big glitch that ended up getting fixed. I think they put up a boundary so people couldn't go into it. I think they put a hard kill bound barrier.
Yeah.
Or maybe a piece of geometry up there. But, if you go on and play Complex just straight off the disc, then it's still there. You have all the AGL events that were happening. So AGL picked up a lot of steam going through the Halo tournaments for Halo 4. You had the creation of Team Throwdown come in, I believe it was like February, March time frame. Then we had all the different map packs come out. We had the Crimson map pack, which was Harvest, Shattered, and Wreckage, which were some pretty interesting maps, some big team maps. And then we had the release of the Majestic map pack, and that was Outcast, help me out here, Brent. Skyline
That was Castle.
Yeah, that was Castle. Daybreak was. Oh no, those all.
Harvest.
Harvest was the first DLC.
Yeah, that was Crimson.
Gosh, I feel kind of bad that I don't know these off the top of my head. So it was Skyline, Landfall, and Monolith, and that was the Majestic map pack. And the Castle map pack was Outcast, Daybreak, and Perdition. I think that's right. I think I may have mixed up Castle and Majestic. I'm going to check Google real quick. But we had those map packs come out. We had a whole bunch of different presentations for at GDC and San Diego Comic-Con. We also had Spartan Assault, the second half of Season 1, get released as DLC earlier in the year. Then, let's see, where did we go from there? We had all the different books come out. So this year, we had the release of... did Primordium release this year? I think it did. I think it was earlier this year. Primordium. And Thursday War got released this year, along with Silentium. Then we're going to have World Dictata come out next year. We also had the big Halo 4 Global Championship that was back in the July to September time frame. So that was a big push for competitive Halo when people kind of started to go away from it just a little bit. AGL was kind of still around at that point. Unfortunately, they fell out due to some unfortunate circumstances. And let's see, any other kind of big Halo moments that I'm missing? We've had all the updates to the playlist, so that's kind of the thing that they're holding on to right now is updating those playlists.
Champions bundle. We got that one right.
Oh yeah, Champions bundle.
Ricochet is a big deal.
Yeah, Ricochet is a huge deal now.
I love me some Ricochet.
With the pit remake, which is Pitfall. That one's pretty big as well.
Yeah.
And then... I can't really think of anything else in terms of like Halo stuff. We had the announcement of the Halo TV series, but that's going to be premiering next year. So
343 Day, that was fun.
Yeah, and we got to participate in that actually.
Yeah, we played Ricochet.
We played Ricochet. My team won.
Yes.
Go me.
I played awful. Like I feel bad that my chihuahua just punched me in the face. Yeah.
You guys were winning there. For a bit, I honestly thought you were going to win because you were up 70-50.
Yeah, I made some fatal mistakes that really just put me off balance. But yeah, it was a fun game. Not fun knowing that you have 1,500 people watching you. pressure's on, but
yeah. And on that note, to all of our new listeners out there, welcome to the show. Hope you guys stick around. We're glad to have every single one of you guys. It's going to be a rough ride for Halo, but if you stick around, I can guarantee we'll have some very awesome content. And we've had some pretty awesome shows in the past, so if you want to go check those out, you can. So feel free. Just a little plug. But I think that kind of wraps up the whole kind of happenings of Halo for this year. Lots of things going on with the game.
It really has been an eventful year for Halo. You know, I mean, people give Halo 4 a lot of crap. They give 343 a lot of crap, but it's been a fun year. And it's been a fun game, too. I like Halo 4. I can say, a year out, that Halo 4 is a good game. Not the best Halo game, but it is a good game.
It's a good
and
game.
And it's been fun.
Compared to, like, other Halo games, I think a lot of people would say it's probably one of the worst games in the franchise, but... It's still a good game to play. I mean, I still play it every week for multitudes of hours.
And that just goes to show you kind of the timeless qualities of Halo. That even, arguably the worst entry in the franchise is still pretty fun. Still fun to play even a year out. We still have a community surrounding it. We still have people making content in Forge. Yeah. Ricochet really... for me at least, kind of revived my zeal for playing Halo, not competitively, but, competitively as I can play it, actually getting in there and wanting to win, right. Playing my hardest.
It's a thing of actually having a team to go in with as well.
Oh, yeah.
Halo used to be at a state where you could go in by yourself a lot of time and still get a good game in, but with how Halo has kind of evolved and where it's in its current state, you kind of have to go in with a group of people that you know and can play with, and that's when it really is fun.
Yeah. But, that's been true for Halo forever, though. It's always better to have people you know playing.
In previous Halo games, you could go into matchmaking on your own and still get like good experiences.
Unless you found the Pontacular crew.
Well, I can't speak to the Halo 2 days, but I know for like Halo 3, it was most of the time going into games, you would have some pretty good experiences.
Yeah.
So that wraps it up for this podcast, our final podcast of 2013. It's going to be really different saying 2014 for every podcast from here until the end of next year. But we have lots of things planned for 2014. We're going to have a lot of information for a Halo 5 coming around. I'll be hitting up the conventions again, probably more conventions this year. I'll be hitting up both PAXes. I'll be hitting up RTX, maybe E3. If there's a big Halo presence there, I may try to go to that. San Diego Comic-Con is a possibility as well. I'm going to be doing the rounds, definitely. Brent, I bet we'll see you back at RTX.
I hope.
It'd be cool to see you at PAX Prime, but I know it's kind of a little harder for you to get out there for fiscal reasons.
Yeah. I mean, I will get to PAX Prime eventually.
Yes,
I will eventually. Be there. I mean, that's been my dream since PAX first started. I mean, the idea of just, you know, all of these gamers gathered in one place for one love.
Nerds.
That's a great thing, though, man. It's all nerds, and they all love being nerds. And especially nowadays, I mean, there was a time when being a nerd was a socially stigmated thing. I mean, there was a huge stigmata surrounding the geek culture and video game culture and stuff like that. But, you know, now everybody plays video games, just about. You know, anybody under the age of 30 pretty much plays video games. And then a lot of people over the age 30, they're playing them now. So it's cool that we've advanced as a society to the point where you have all of these people from different walks of life and different ages and, you know, things coming together to enjoy video games.
Mostly the younger age.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's going to be true for any kind of new media. I mean, back when rock and roll was new, you didn't have 40-year-olds, you know, jamming out. I mean, there were 40-year-olds back then that jammed out, but they were kind of creepy. But, I mean, nowadays, think about it, there's I don't want to call them old, but we have people like JVB and, you know, the Halo Fan for Life and these older individuals who like games. I mean, well, you're not seeing like 70-year-olds up there, you know, with a cane being like, "Are you ready to get your ass whipped in some Halo?" You know, but I mean.
Yeah, but it's definitely a fun place to be. And eventually when you get there, hopefully it'll be a big year for Halo.
No, every year is a big year for Halo, as far as I'm concerned.
It has its off years. Well, this year would be the off year if they actually stuck to a 3-year cycle.
I have this sinking feeling, though, that Halo 5 is going to get delayed until 2015.
I honestly wouldn't mind.
I would.
I think it would be better for the franchise if they waited on the release instead of trying to push it out. Because I still feel that they're trying to push it out way too quickly.
Yeah, I don't think that it should be on a 1 or 2 year. I mean, at least it should be a 2-year cycle.
Well, if they release in November, it would be a 2-year cycle. But
oh, yeah, you're right. A 3-year cycle.
Yeah, I really think it needs to be a 3-year cycle, personally. I mean, it survived for the Halo franchise when Bungie had it under control. I don't see why they couldn't do it for Halo now when 343 has it.
I also think first of all, Destiny would just completely decimate Halo 5. And I would play Destiny probably over Halo 5 just because it's a new thing. And I mean,
I love Destiny
Halo.
Coming out in the fall next year. It may be in the best interest of Microsoft to go ahead and push back the release for Halo 5.
Yeah. Destiny is going to face roll every single game that comes out in that same time frame. No other game can exist. Destiny is just going to be
It's going to be like GTA all over again.
I mean, but even bigger than GTA, because I mean, GTA, it's big, but it's the fifth game in a storied franchise. It just doesn't seem like as big of an event as Destiny is going to be. I mean, Destiny is one of my favorite developer, probably my favorite developer of all time, Bungie, finally, you know, making a new franchise, and it's completely different than any other game that's come before it. It's going to be a big deal. GTA 5 was, there were changes, and there were good changes, but it was basically GTA. I mean, you knew what you were going to get into when you bought that game. Destiny is completely different. Whole new world to explore, whole new massive universe full of canon to discover. I mean, that's what I'm excited for.
Oh, yeah.
So
Most definitely.
I don't think Halo could compete. It would have the best chance out of pretty much any other sci-fi franchise, but it would still get face rolled. So 2015, you know, get some extra development time, have some time for the people that were kind of mad at Halo 4 to simmer down, be like, it's been, you know, 3 years. Check it out. You know, we're back. Just all of that would add up to a better experience.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, though, that you got to wonder, how are we going to maintain our Halo playing habit? Are we going to keep playing Halo 4 next year for the entirety of next year, assuming that they do move it to 2015?
I'll be playing.
If you move Halo 5 to 2015, at least get Certain Affinity or some other third party developer to come out with another map pack, just to keep Halo 4 alive. Give me some Ricochet maps. Give me some more weapons.
So I think they're kind of relying on the whole rotational playlist to really kind of keep that alive aspect to the matchmaking.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's only so many times you can rotate playlists before you get diminishing returns there. You got to put out new content.
Well, I mean, we don't know what they have in store. It'd be cool to see something like a next season of Spartan Ops.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. What if come E3 next year, they say, look, we can't get Halo 5 out this year because, you know, we need more time. But guess what? Spartan Ops Season 2.
Hey. I know quite a few people who that would be extravagant over that, and I would be one of those.
Oh, yeah. I would totally. I love that.
I need to finish. Like, once I finish the mole, I got to finish my Spartan Ops guide.
I want to go back and play Spartan Ops now.
There will be times.
Not the first half, really. I mean,
not the era of the eggheads.
No, no, that was my favorite part of the first half. I just didn't like the gameplay. Like, I was sad when she quit saying eggheads. I mean, I think every good character needs a catchphrase. You know, I mean, look at every great character. Well, not every great character. I'm just saying having a catchphrase is a fun thing for a character to have. And Sarah Palmer is not the lead character, so she can have a catchphrase. It'd be a little cheesy if Chief said something weird every time.
Yeah, but she's becoming a huge role.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of character. Like the Arbiter, you know, he was a big character for a long time. But, I mean, nobody's going to say that he was the main character. Master Chief is and will always be the main character in the Halo franchise. The only other character that could possibly even maybe come close to his popularity or just being known by people is Cortana. And she's bye-bye. Gotta go save Cortana in Halo 5.
Mm-hmm.
Revive her.
Yep.
I'm getting kind of... I'm not going to lie. I wish that they would have just killed her off. It would have meant more to me if I just knew for sure she was gone forever, can't ever come back. It's just over. Like, that's tragedy. It's not tragedy if you get to come back next game after you've died.
We don't know if it'll be next game, though. And we don't know if it's going to be Cortana as we knew her.
Yeah, it'd be like crazy rampant Cortana, like marathon style Durandal. Yeah.
I mean, I want to hold discussions of that topic off until we actually dive into those Halo 4 specific, like, storyline new, what we want to see in Halo 5 podcasts. So,
no, I mean,
there's definitely lots of room for discussion. Definitely lots of room.
at this point, any talk about Halo 5 is just complete and utter speculation. I mean, you're just pulling stuff out that because there's we don't know anything about it, really. I mean, we can kind of guess, but I mean, other than Master Chief walking through the desert, you know, with a horse on a horse with no name, we don't know anything about him. I mean, all we know is that there's this big forerunner, like flying creature thing, and the chief in a
pretty much
scarf.
Yeah, but those discussions will come eventually. But for now, we're going to say goodbye to 2013, and we will see you guys in 2014. It's been a good year. It's been a good year for Halo, good year for the podcast. I think we've had over... I want to say we've probably had upwards of at least 500,000 downloads for this year for the podcast. So
pretty good.
It was definitely very front-loaded when Halo 4 was still in its prime. I think we were hitting regularly 15,000 to 25,000 downloads a show all the way up until April, and then it just dropped off somewhere. And then we've kind of been getting about 20,000 or so downloads a month. Not quite that much in the later months, but we've had the beginning of the year for us was great for the podcast. And I know we're in kind of a lull right now. We get about 2,000 or 3,000 downloads consistently per show now, which, I mean, it's to be expected with kind of how Halo has taken a turn in kind of the popularity within the gaming realm. But with Halo 5 stuff, once it starts rolling out, I'm sure we'll probably pick up again and people will get back and interested into the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We have lots of big things for Podtacular coming down the road. I have ideas for getting changes to the website, getting the forums back up and running. On a positive note, though, all the episodes, I did fulfill the episodes part, and I believe I mentioned this on the previous podcast, but in case I didn't, all the episodes are available for download. If you go through and go to the past history of all the episodes, you can download every single one now from the respective podcast pages, including the three different video podcasts that we did between the Age of Fumo and the Age of Me, which were video formats. And those three episodes, I made audio versions of them, so you can download the audio version or you can watch the video version. So all the episodes are available for download. So I know some people have wanted to go back and listen to past episodes, so now you can. So check that out. Also, we have our Halo Community Appreciation Giveaway, and we are extending the deadline to the end of the year because I know that for some people, there's probably more priority in getting gifts for some people and traveling and all that stuff. So we got some extra items to add to the prize piles, the goodie bags, so to speak. So we wanted to kind of extend that out to have more people in. And we only have like 5 submissions right now. So I want to kind of give a little more opportunity for people to kind of submit their stuff in. And I'm going to go on a huge promotional spree here. It may have already started by the time you listen to this podcast, but so definitely check that out. If you go to our homepage, there's a little picture that you can click on the right that takes you to the rules and info and the ways that you can enter the giveaway and all the prizes that are included there as well. So go check it out. It's lots of goodies that we have to give away. Lots of exclusive things from San Diego Comic-Con and certain affinity, swag, avatar items, DLC, all that good stuff. So check it out, podtacular.com, and then just click over onto the Halo Community Appreciation Giveaway and check out everything there. That wraps up Podtacular for 2013. We will be back on, I think, the 2nd of January, and we will be slowly picking up on doing our games of the year for 2013. So we will kind of be gathering our thoughts of what we think of kind of impactful games of the year other than Halo, and we'll kind of tally those up on January 2nd, along with reading the first bulletin of 2013, maybe. I don't know if they'll put something out on January 1st. If not, then we'll just kind of be talking specifically for games of the year for 2013.
I know my game of the year, 2013.
Oh, yeah?
Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, gosh.
That's a game for the ages. That should be game of the year every
single year. It didn't come out in 2013, though.
No, but it was fun in 2013 and 2012. And it's just eternally fun. But they did put out an expansion pack in 2013, didn't they?
They have the new fourth expansion pack, and they had the PAX East packs and the PAX Prime pack, and now this the Christmas stuff that they've been doing recently. Holiday bullshit.
Yeah.
So there's that as well.
I've played a lot of card games, but I have never had as much fun as I have had playing Cards Against Humanity at RTX.
It's freaking ridiculous. I'm actually planning on taking it home when I go home this week to play it with the family. So it's hilarious. It's completely wrong in multiple ways.
It's wrong in all the right ways.
I'll leave that up to the opinion of the players. Anywho, thank you guys for listening to us. For those that stuck it out with us all the way through the end of the year and continue to support us by coming back and listening to us, we really appreciate it. Have a happy holidays. Check us out on all of our social networks, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff. And make sure you check out our community appreciation giveaway. Make sure you check out the Halo Mole, which will be premiering next year, of course. And make sure you check us out on our website, podtacular.com. And until 2014, Brent, it is time to say goodbye to 2013.
Yep. Keep on fragging 2013. Because you don't have much time left.
Nope. Nope, you don't.